The opinions expressed on this program are those of the hosts and their guests, and not of Blue Sky Broadcasting.
Hey everybody, welcome to the program. My name is Barbara, and it is my pleasure to welcome you all in today and to welcome on your behalf Lake Pendere School District Superintendent Tom Albertson. You know, I knew a few weeks ago when we scheduled this program that the superintendent and I had a lot to talk about, and now in addition, we're going to ask about his retirement plans from the district for next year. So keep it right here today and every Tuesday. As we do our best to keep you informed, and we will be right back after this.
Have you heard the legend of the beast? It's a tale that's been told in these parts for generations. They say the beast stalks the local woods and roads, a rugged, fearless animal who feeds on wet pavement, thick mud, and fresh snow. It's quick as a bird, but strong as a bull. An alpha predator with a roar that can rip concrete and steely teeth that gnash through even the thickest of brush. The beast isn't scared. It doesn't have to be. It owns these parts. But there's still a chance it can be tamed by the right hero. Whether you're looking for the ultimate tool on the worksite or just a wreck vehicle fit for a weekend warrior, Ford F-150 is your best choice for work or play. Visit your local Northwest Ford dealer or buyfordnow.com to see why the new Northwest Edition F-150 is creating a beastly legend all its own.
Okay, joining us today on the podcast is Stan and Roy, collectively known as the Raptors from Triple Play. Guys, here's a question. I've heard the Raptor Reef Water Park is always exactly 86 degrees. Why is this?
Well, Madeline, rigorous studies showed us that 86 degrees is the ideal temperature for fun to grow and flourish.
Oh, Stan.
So are you saying the water park would be less fun if it was 85 or 87 degrees?
I think that might possibly be exactly what I'm saying.
Could we make that not what he's saying?
The Raptors are brought to you by Triple Play, where you can bowl, play laser tag, climb a ropes course, and splash around in Raptor Reef Indoor Water Park. Plus, it's all attached to a cozy hotel. Visit 3play.com.
At 88 degrees, fun really dissipates, and we want to avoid that.
Okay, Stan, what is that based on?
Instinct, Roy. Distinct instinct.
Oh.
I'm Tiffany. I have some tips for you on how to quit smoking like I did. First, I did some reading about it. I found a lot of great advice on how to quit smoking and picked out the ways I thought would work best for me. I started by setting a quit date. Then I threw out my ashtrays, lighters, and matches. I did other things too, like exercising more, and it worked. But I'd still get cravings, especially on long car rides. To help me with that, I put a picture of my mother in my car. She died of lung cancer from smoking cigarettes when I was only 16. Now I have a 16-year-old daughter. That picture of my mother reminds me that I don't want to miss all the things my daughter is going to do in her life, including turning 17.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC.
97.1 FM, 1450 KBFI, and 1400 KSPT.
All right, everyone, we are back. We are here with Tom Albertson, and I hate to put you off for another minute, but I have an announcement to make. This is from, do you remember the program I did with the Panhandle Patriots Writing Club, Viper and Bear? Well, listen, they are such a wonderful group of people that are basically out of Coeur d'Alene, and they do all kinds of fundraising and things for the veterans and the homeless, and they're helping put up a Veterans Monument in one of the cemeteries, actually, in Hayden. So they sent me an announcement of a food donation drive and Christmas soup kitchen. that they are sponsoring and helping to sponsor with other groups. And the easiest way for you to be a part of this is go to Panhandle Patriots Writing Club, and you're going to get a phone number when you get to their website. You call that phone number, and then they can give you all the information on what they need and where to drop donations off. And this is in the Spokane Post Falls, Coeur d'Alene Valley, but they help the homeless, they help veterans. So if you're down in that area, it would be a good thing. I'll give you two drop-off points. One that you all probably know from passing by is Candlelight Christian Fellowship right there on Highway 95, and the other is a church called The Altar on Best Avenue. Anyway, give it a thought, and if you feel like you want to help, then you would be greatly appreciated. All right, everybody, that's it. As promised, Tom Albertson is here. Tom, welcome to the program. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Barbara. Thanks for inviting me in on this snowy afternoon.
I know. It just started to snow when we were arriving. All right. Well, retirement. When and how did you make the decision to retire?
You know, we've completed 35 years in education, which is a long time, and I've enjoyed every aspect of it, and I've held many different positions. Probably the most important would be 22 years as a classroom teacher in mathematics, and it's the relationships you build within that time, and everything in education that we do, it's about student learning and about what happens in the classroom with the students. So, you know, those are very fond times of being in the classroom teaching, but then also in my administration career of being principal at Sandpoint High School, athletic director for a short stint, assistant principal, and then, finishing my third year as superintendent. So, you know, it came to a point where I did have some minor health issues with my neck. And I think, you know, my wife's been retired for 2 years, and we just kind of reflect on life, and that transition time comes. And sometimes when least expected, it's not something where I went to work every day waiting for retirement. I just think it was a good transition time, and it's only fair to the school board for my timing to give them the optimum time to hire the next leader. And it's usually that January, February time when leaders out there are looking to move, and if it gets too much later in the year, they're gonna maybe be staying put. So that did play into my decision as well.
So this retirement will take effect at the end of this school year?
Yes, that's correct.
And will you be involved, and can you be involved, on the selection committee for the next superintendent?
It's the role of the school board to hire and fire the superintendent. So I will not have a role in that position. If someone asked my opinion, I would be glad to give that, but I will not be actively involved. So that's one of the roles of school board is to they do the hiring of the superintendent and also set policy. Other positions in the district, other administrative positions, teachers, that hiring is done from the superintendent and or building administrators. So really it is the role of the school district, school board, right, for the school district that will be doing that hiring. So I would have a very limited role in that.
Are parents or patrons ever invited in on that selection committee at one of the levels, either reviewing resumes or after the resumes have been sorted at the next level when it's honed down to 2, 3, 4?
Yeah, I can only speak on the process that I went through when I was hired. And absolutely, there was a big community forum. So there were multiple opportunities, not just for community members and patrons and business owners to sit in an interview and a Q&A, but also to meet with students, which is also important. So there was multiple steps in the process.
What kind of input, though, did they have to the final decision?
I think they filled out a written rubric and gave their input, and then that was given to the school board.
All right.
So ultimately, it's going to be the school board's decision, but I can just speak of the last process the school board involve multiple stakeholder groups in getting that input.
And you were like an in-house, obviously, promotion. And I can't tell you how many people have mentioned, even in this short period of time, how they hope that happens again, even though, you know, we don't know who will be applying and how that will work. But to know that someone who knows the district, because this may surprise you, I don't know, but I do not think this is, I don't want you to retire. I think this is not the time for a changeover. I think we're in transition in our district in a very important way, and I think a very healthy way, but certainly a way that has some difficulties, and that to have someone with your experience at the helm in leadership, I think is important. So if your neck gets a lot better, I think you ought to reapply.
Well, thank you for that confidence. You know, I will do everything within what's asked of me to help with a smooth transition. And I care deeply about our community. Just because I'm retiring does not mean that I will quit caring deeply about our community and our educational community. So, you know, there's always more ways to contribute rather than just being employed too. So,
you know, there was a recent, the recent school board meeting where there were people there, importantly and rightfully so, complimenting Gary Supiger and Carrie Kelly as they retire, and certainly also commenting on appreciation for you. But they said, one of the speakers said something that bothered me, Tom, and I'd like your opinion. I know you're not responsible for what other people say, but this person, this lady, talked about the loud minority and that there was a quiet majority that was in support of all of you. And I disagreed with two things. First of all, I don't think that the people who have been speaking at school district meetings over the last couple of years, actually, but maybe more recently, are necessarily loud. There might be some that speak out of turn, but most don't. And I don't think they're the minority anymore. I think that that is a growing group of parents and patrons that feel perhaps left out. They feel like they want more or they want to say more. And I don't think it's the minority anymore. So what do you think? How do you see that whole thing?
First and foremost, it's so important to remember that education is nonpartisan. And it has to stay that way. This is not about one political party or another political party. It's about children being educated in the classroom with the highly trained teacher, building that community of learners. And the farther we get away from that, you know, it turns into some dangerous territory. We heavily involve parents in the communication and the education of their children, and that's always been invited. And I know sometimes people don't feel that way. And through the difficult year that we had with COVID and we had limited visitors, I understand that was a difficult change. But, you know, we do have volunteers that come in, and parents do volunteer in the classrooms. I just toured two new school board members around our facilities, and it's amazing how many parents may take 1 hour in the morning before they go to work to help volunteer in a classroom. And so the community involvement and the parent involvement in their child's education and or in our school district is really important and is welcome, to a point that it doesn't disrupt the educational process. We got to let the teachers teach. With that said, I also know that I tell parents, have you talked to your child about what you're learning today, what they're learning yesterday, what they're going to be learning to the next week? Have you had communication with the classroom teacher? Have you talked to the building principal? I mean, so to me, having that open dialogue is so important. So to say, back to your original question, what is a minority?
Who
is the minority? I really can't speak to that. What I speak to is hopefully every child has their parents and or trusted adults in the community that are involved in their life and involved in their education. So important.
You know, that raises a question that I just thought of, and that is what kind of mentoring or what kind of help are parents? You know, some parents are just naturally involved. Mm-hmm. I mean, they go on a vacation, they ask their kids. My parents asked me to write an essay on it. I mean, you know, just want to, you know, but, or do it in pictures or something creative. But some other parents either don't do that or they just don't realize they need to do it. So does the school district mentor, teach, bring parents in and teach them how to be involved and read to their kids at the lower levels or ask about the old, never stop asking the teenagers. Parents kind of go hands off with the teenagers. Yeah. How does that work?
There's programs in our community that are connected to the school district, like Ready for Kindergarten, where families, it's a voluntary program where families can come in, they can get books, they can be trained of how to start reading to children at a young age. So I would say more in the pre-K. Mm-hmm. You know, historically, we have taught parenting classes, Love and Logic. That has been... many years back. So maybe it's time there's
Foster
a need for
Klein,
that.
Correct. Wasn't it?
Correct.
Yeah, I remember a radio show on that.
Yeah. So, you know, historically the school district has done that. You know, maybe it's time if there's a need to bring some of those type of programs back. But again, it's being involved in your kids. You're absolutely right. Yeah. And then you get to the middle school and teenage years where it's so important.
I know, to know parents what back off and they shouldn't.
Right. Yeah. Know what your kids are up to and what they're doing and what they're learning.
Yeah, and who their friends are.
Yeah, yeah.
One other thing, and this is a kudo for the library. I've done several programs on the library for some reason this year, and I'm going to be interviewing the new director. But they have so many. They have tutoring. Mm-hmm. They have reading for the little ones. They have a lot of things that are available at the library. So that is definitely a resource. And I did a show on homeschooling, Tom, recently, mm-hmm. not as in opposition to public education, but just simply as its own entity, and how much they depend on those kinds of resources too, for the education choices they make for their kids.
Yeah.
Well, okay. One of the areas that I really am looking forward to you commenting on, and that is test metrics, because I'm here to say from online information to other people telling me things, it's like all over the board that we apparently have some schools in our district that are doing in certain age groups, in certain, whether it's English or math, I think are the two areas, they're doing above average, but most everyone is doing average or even below average. So first of all, I know it's a lot of, with all the schools and all the ages, it's hard to break it down, but can you give us some idea of how our students are doing in our district? And, well, let me stop there. How are we doing?
Well, we have several metrics. One would be what we call a MAP test, which is called Measuring Academic Progress. And a MAP test, which is for our elementary students, which goes up through eighth grade, and we do test some ninth graders, measures growth. And there's a difference between measuring achievement and measuring growth. So when we, so what we like about the MAP test is that we can actually measure the growth that students are making. And so we do a fall test and a winter test on the MAP test in English language arts and mathematics.
That's annual.
Correct. And so what that can do is give our teachers valuable data on saying, okay, is the instruction helping, working, and are we seeing the growth? Now, we know if students are growing, that's going to equate to achievement, which again is going to be measured on the Idaho Standard Achievement Test. And we follow each cohort. So one thing in being a math teacher and specifically teaching statistics is you can kind of make statistics say whatever you want it to say. So you got to be careful when you hear data. We try to follow a cohort from, example, third grade to fourth grade to fifth grade and sixth grade, and not just look at, say, how are the third graders doing this year compared to the third graders of last year. We're trying to follow that same group all the way through. And for example, we do have I have some data here that we took in 2018, the third graders were 60% advanced or proficient on their English language arts on the Idaho Standard Achievement Test. And then that same cohort went up to 63%. We do have a hole because we did not ISAT test in the spring of 2020 during the shutdown. And then last year as eighth graders, they were up to 66%. So when we can look at that, I guess you would say diagonal data, we're seeing growth of 60, 63, 66. And so last year's eighth graders, 66%, and this is district-wide. This isn't, I don't like pitting one school versus another. This is the whole district, all the schools combined. We had 66% of our students were proficient or advanced on English language arts.
You may not want to, and I agree, certainly on the air like this, pit a school against a school, but you certainly must have the data to know that, you know, one school is really pulling those numbers up and another school's bringing them down, and that's how they ended up at 60 instead of 80 or
Absolutely.
Something. So you can address school by school.
We do. And, you know, we implemented what we call professional learning communities this past school year, and we started 2 years ago, or actually 3 years ago, but we really emphasized it this year. And professional learning community is when you have opportune time for grade level teachers, or in our small schools, what we call is longitudinal, maybe second, third, and fourth graders collaborating on what's working, what are
the
best
teachers.
Practices, the teachers.
Okay.
And, but they don't just do it on what they think. They're using data to look at that and what we call formative assessments. How did your students do on this formative assessment? Wow, they did so well. What strategy did you use? I want to implement that into my classroom as well. So using best practices and having, you know, teachers teaching teachers. So, you know, professional learning communities are based off of four basic questions. What do we want students to know? So we need to be very solid on what the state standards are and what we're teaching. How do we know they've learned it? And that's our assessments, and that's formative assessments, which is different than summative. Summative is a test at the end, but we want to do a formative assessment is how are they doing along the way. And then question three that they have to answer is, what are we going to do if a student's not getting it, or a group of students are not getting it? Are we just going to let it go, or are we going to go back and reteach? What strategies do we have? And then also the fourth question would be, what do we do with students who do get it? We don't want to hold students back that are advanced. We want to provide opportunities to extend them and push them. So it's very simple, and I like those four questions because sometimes we make things way too complicated. And we want to simplify this to just help students' achievement and student learning.
You know, I like those four questions, too. And we're going to come back to this as soon as we go on a break. And we're going to do that right now.
Merry Christmas from Grunberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet. Christmas silver is in stock now. Plus, they have preparedness and homesteading books and supplies, emergency rations, food storage supplies, ammo and knives, and a new line of ReadyWise foods. There's also great gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else in our area. Open weekdays and Saturdays through Christmas. Located on Triangle Drive, just south of the Kootenai Cutoff Road in Ponderay. Grunberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet.
Okay, joining us today on the podcast is Stan and Roy, collectively known as the Raptors from Triple Play. Guys, here's a question. I've heard the Raptor Reef Water Park is always exactly 86 degrees. Why is this?
Well, Madeline, rigorous studies showed us that 86 degrees is the ideal temperature for fun to grow and flourish.
Oh, Stan.
So are you saying the water park would be less fun if it was 85 or 87 degrees?
I think that might possibly be exactly what I'm saying.
Could we make that not what he's saying?
The Raptors are brought to you by Triple Play, where you can bowl, play laser tag, climb a ropes course, and splash around in Raptor Reef Indoor Water Park. Plus, it's all attached to a cozy hotel. Visit 3play.com.
At 88 degrees, fun really dissipates, and we want to avoid that.
Okay, Stan, What is that based on?
Instinct, Roy. Distinct instinct.
Oh.
Here's your chance. You could win one of five sets of season tickets to the 2022 Numerica Credit Union Concert Series at the Gorge.
Tennessee whiskey.
Visit LiveNation.com/Numerica for details on how you can see Chris Stapleton's All-American Roadshow. Brandi Carlile Beyond the Silent Days Tour. Jack Johnson, and so many others, all part of the 2022 Numerica Credit Union Concert Series at the Gorge. Voted one of the best outdoor venues in America, and Numerica wants you to have season seats. Visit LiveNation.com/Numerica to view all the concerts, enter the giveaway, and get ready to return to live.
Where all the good people go?
NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, is the largest grassroots organization for mental health in the country. Hi, this is Jessica Rachels. Our Far North branch has been serving Bonner County for over 14 years. Your mental health matters to us, and we are dedicated to improving your quality of life in any way we can. Due to the holidays, we will not have our monthly support meeting, but have some great speakers lined up in 2022. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Keep up to date on everything we're doing at NorthIdahoRadio.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome back in. We've got it going on today for you with Lake Pendere School District Superintendent Tom Albertson. So I hope you're enjoying the program. I am. And we were talking, Tom, before we went on break about the professional learning community and the four questions. Teachers collaborating with teachers for what is and what isn't or what may be working better. Let me ask, in that context, or maybe it's in a different context, are teachers evaluated ultimately on how their classroom and how their kids are doing?
Yeah, the state has a rubric. It's called Charlotte Danielson Framework for Teaching, Teaching and Learning. And that is the framework that's been adopted for the state that every certified teacher is evaluated on. And there's 22 components. And of those 22 components, there is the section on teaching and learning. And every year, teachers need to set goals, minimum of two goals, and then they're measured on part of the evaluation is on how they've achieved and reached those goals. And one of the goals has to be around academic achievement.
Of the kids, how the kids Correct. Are testing out.
Correct.
And the goals that they set are, and so, okay, if it's grade-based or achievement-based that's tested for the kids, I guess that certainly is measurable.
Correct. Yeah, yes, need to be measurable. But you need to understand that it's also, for example, we may see district-wide, for some reason, third graders are achieving lower than the second grade group below them or the fourth grade group above them. And they don't know a rhyme or reason. They probably previously had the same kindergarten teacher, the same first grade teacher, same second grade teacher. But for some reason, could be, and I don't want to stereotype or put any barriers in the way, but so socioeconomic status comes into play. We've talked about parent involvement.
Yes.
There's a lot of factors involved. The other thing that we have to be careful of is it would be very nice if we could measure students who have gone through our education system from kindergarten through 12th grade. Our community is growing. Mm-hmm. We're getting new people that are moving in. Some people move out, but we're really very stable in our student population this school year. And so we may have students who are coming in that, have been out of school for 2 or 3 years, we're struggling in their past school district, and now they're in our cohort. So we got to make sure that we aren't too critical of the hard work that our classroom teachers are doing and how they just do wonders with those young minds, because there are many variables and factors you have to
weigh into. It's the same thing as evaluating the students. I mean, they take tests. They're responsible for how they are improving and achieving, you know, for the work and diligence that they as a student. So it's fair to evaluate the teachers also. It's mm-hmm. kind of like their test. Mm-hmm. This just occurred to me. I did an interview with the Waldorf school director, and I don't know how familiar you are with Waldorf, but she told me something that just blew me away. They get kids come in, and they have the same teacher
all the way
that
through.
That teacher follows them all the way through, so they just become, I don't know, they're like a clan or something. Yeah. And she, I mean, they have kids in and out also, but she is the stable one. And for all the kids that stay there stable, they really get to know right. each other and learn together.
Yeah.
What I call do you that think
of that? You know, I think if you can do it to the economy of scale, there's some pros to that. We do have a microcosm of that at times where teachers loop. They may loop their, take the second grade, and then the next year they go third grade,
mm-hmm.
and then loop back around. So they have that same group of students for multiple years. But, you know, we're... you know, just under 3,900 students in our district. And so it's very difficult to put that philosophy into place. So
is the number of students actually growing, or
are we
just pretty much staying the same?
You know, we are about, I have to be careful here. Last year, we had parents who made different choices for their students for variable reasons. So last year we were about 400 students less than we are this year. Doesn't mean that we had a net growth from the 2019 of 400 students, but we are up probably 70 to 75 students in the school district from pre-COVID. So the way I look at it is, yes, and I think we're going to continue to see a stable growth, probably not a real steep student growth, and I think there's some limiting factors within our community that would prevent young families with children being able to move into our community to afford housing.
Mm-hmm. Coming in, because we attract the an older retiring population too.
Right, right. But we do have a lot of industry for our type of town.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, we're the county seat.
There's a lot of industry. You know, we've got a lot of manufacturers that go on. I learn about a new company every day. You know, I'm going, wow, I didn't know that was in our community. So with that, there is that opportunity. And I would say, you know, comparing ourselves to a ski town similar to maybe Sun Valley, maybe we have more industry and more opportunities for people to work. But, you know, one of the challenges that we're looking at is how do we recruit and retain a workforce?
Yes.
Just when housing is very difficult to either find and or afford.
Yeah.
So it's something that, and I know this is not unique to Lake Pendere School District, it's a community topic.
Yeah, we do not want to be Sun Valley, or what they call the Sun Valley phenomenon, because, you know, people, wealthy people who can afford, you know, fly in for a couple of weeks or a week of skiing or a week of sunning or hiking or something, and they are not going to the football games. They are not giving money to the food bank, not because they don't care. It's just they're not in the community that
right.
way. They're not getting their hair cut there. They're getting their hair cut in Dallas, or where they're coming in from. And it's very difficult. It's a very difficult thing that goes on in some of those high-end resort communities.
Right. So I do see that if I had a crystal ball, and there's always things that can upend, I'll call the ecosystem of our community. Economy plays a big role in it. But as long as the economy stays fairly stable, and we don't have any major mishaps with some of our major employers, I think that our school enrollment will continue to grow, but at a slower rate than maybe, say, a community that's expanding, such as maybe the Post Falls area, Rathdrum area, just in the sense that we're somewhat limited by property and costs. So
yeah, it's interesting that you bring up the phrase crystal ball, because that was one of my, I was thinking a couple of days ago, I thought, I wonder if, you know, should we do a retrospective and go back over all of the highlights of Tom's career? And I thought, I'm much more interested, if you will allow me, to be interested in what you see, your future vision, your crystal ball. What do you see coming for that? You've already said so, kind of not a big trend in increase, but not a decline in the enrollment.
Right.
What do you see coming for the school district that either concerns you or delights you?
Yeah. There's no easy answer to deal with aging facilities, and that is a can that continues to be kicked down the road. And you got to remember, my background is raised on a farm, worked on a farm as a kid, and wasn't raised with fancy things. And you can get a lot done with old equipment.
I was going to say real quick that you remind me in saying that, not you, but that saying of my grandpa, who was a farmer, and we always teased him about, he always had wire and duct tape seemed to be the answer for a lot of things, but not the lung.
Yeah. So our community is going to have to look at school facilities at some point. And I do realize, we did put to the voters in 2016 a plant facility to build, I believe, a couple elementary schools and a new middle school, which the community spoke loud that it wasn't the time. It was either too big of a project. It doesn't mean that the next leader will need to be looking at that. I don't think we have a wonderful maintenance department who works extremely hard and does wonders with our facilities. And facilities are not everything.
Yeah.
You can get a very good education in an older building. But at some point in time, that is just something either through the growth of our student population and our aging facilities that we're going to have to address that as a group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate you, Barbara, in the sense that that would be in open conversation, even with opposing views, keeping things civil, having a very educated conversation around this topic of what's best.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no secret at the state level that funding facilities in a local school district has been left up to the local people.
Yeah.
It has not been really state funding for that.
Is it reasonable to think that the facility question can be, I think, I kind of remember that last levy, and it seemed like it was just so big, it was so overwhelming, and I think people couldn't get their head around it.
Right.
Is there a way to do it in bites?
Just
take the worst case scenario and start working on that, and if you need a new building, then that's what we do, but the other ones still are like just maintained.
Right. And we are maintaining our buildings. I don't want anybody to think that
we don't
have a safe environment for kids to be educated in, because we do. And that is to a lot of effort of our in-house crew that makes sure that that happens. So, but for example, a lot of our buildings, the plumbing, and this is something I've talked about with the school board, our plumbing, which is embedded into concrete floors, is starting to fail. So, already this year we've had two projects where we've had to jackhammer up the kitchen at one school and part of a hallway in another school. Actually, there's been three now, and then in one classroom just to get to the failing pipes.
Right.
We can do that.
Yeah.
Okay. We try not to disrupt the education when it's happening, but at what point in time does it become too debilitating to be able to
and too
keep
expensive
that.
To keep
too
doing
expensive,
it that
you
way.
Know, at one point in time. But that, so I just say that is a challenge that and that's not the school district's challenge. That's a community issue. Just to start having dialogue again around that.
Yeah, I agree. All right, we're up against our last break. We're going to take that break right now.
BF Quick Lube at the top of the South Hill does more than just lubes and oil changes. They do them quick. Just stop by or call and make an appointment at 208-267-7481. Along with regular maintenance, BF Quick Lube can handle most of your other auto repairs. BF Quick Lube would like to take this time to say thank you to each of their customers for putting their trust and support in their services year after year. For a quick lube and oil change and so much more, visit your friends at BF Quick Lube on the South Hill in Bonner's Ferry.
Happy holidays from your friends at Super One Foods in Sandpoint. Stop by for all your holiday needs or save time and shop online. Then set the time to pick up your items at the store in one of the reserved parking spaces, or you can have them delivered right to your home. Go to superone.net to see just how easy it is. Looking for a great job? Sandpoint Super One is now hiring. Some positions start at $18 an hour. Sandpoint Super One.
America's most beautiful small town is all dressed up in its holiday best, with twinkly lights, decorated shop windows, and all the holiday trimmings. Experience shopping hometown style in the Sandpoint Shopping District. One-of-a-kind stores each reflect the unique personality and passion of their owners. You'll find things you just won't see anywhere else. What a refreshing change. Parking is free in the city lot. Rediscover the excitement and joy you thought was a thing of the past in the Sandpoint Shopping District.
Merry Christmas from Grunberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet. Christmas silver is in stock now, plus they have preparedness and homesteading books and supplies, emergency rations, food storage supplies, ammo and knives, and a new line of ReadyWise foods. There's also great gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else in our area. Open weekdays and Saturdays through Christmas. Located on Triangle Drive, just south of the Kootenai Cutoff Road in Ponderay. Grunberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet.
All right, crew, let's get her dug.
Honey, you want to give me a hand? I'm planting that tree, remember?
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. You must call 811 at least 2 to 3 business days before any digging project, so you can avoid hitting our essential buried utilities. This includes natural gas and petroleum pipelines, electric, communication cables, and water and sewer lines. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811. Brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
KSPT 1400, KBFI 1450, North Idaho's radio.
All right, we are talking with Tom Albertson. He is the Lake Ponderay School District Superintendent, and he is retiring. I've already expressed that I don't think this is a good time for him to retire, but he's not listening to me. He's made his decision. But anyway, Tom, we thank you so much for being with us today and sharing the information that you have in your thoughts. I was happy to interview the two school district candidates for the board that was contested this year, the incumbent Gary Supiger and the challenger Jalen Peters, who ultimately was successful and is the new board member. And one of the things that came up where they disagreed on was the permanent levy. Mm-hmm. And Gary had a lot of very good reasons for defending it. It was, you know, a stable stream of income, and you didn't have to go to the cost of an election, and teachers could more plan out further. But Jalen was presenting the idea that, I mean, it's just a done deal. And nobody has to come forward from the district and say, this is how we want to spend our money. We're asking for this amount. This is what we want to do for it. And you guys have to make the decision for us. Do you discern any downside at all to the permanent levy?
I don't. And I'll give you my reasons. And I'll give you the same reasons when I was out going around to community events, telling people why I felt that the community would benefit from a permanent levy. As we saw from when Lake Ponderay School District became in existence of 1999, when we moved from Bonner County School District to Lake Ponderay School District, we then started passing some supplemental levies. And, you know, probably be a whole nother show talking about, you know, our state sitting on $1.6 billion surplus, but we're still having to pay for schools at the local level is a whole different topic.
Yeah, exactly.
But we continue to increase that levy every 2 years. And I get it. I do understand the idea of giving voters that choice, but we have a pretty strong record of our community continuing to pass those supplemental levies. When we went to the voters to make the current levy permanent, it was not an increase. It was the one that they had already approved. And I'm all for voters having that choice. But I also heard from a lot of people, you know, every 2 years it's going up. And this was a way to lock it in. And we're not increasing it. We will try to go as many years as possible without going back to the voters. And if it were to ever be increased again, it would have to be on voter approval. It cannot be increased. And so for me, it was a way of, okay, we keep a lot of schools open. We're a very rural school district. You know, it doesn't fit the economy of scale of how the state funds schools. There's more of a cookie cutter approach that it's more efficient to run an elementary school of 450 or 500 kids, not keep our wonderful Hope Elementary open with 117 and our South Side open with 170 and North Side open. And so it costs more to operate those.
Even with the busing that would have to incur?
Yeah. I mean, just duplication of services.
Yeah.
But with that said, so I am a proponent that I feel that it has stopped the every 2 years of the increase on that. Take a pause. Let's really take a look at this. And maybe there can be a shift to a different way of funding coming from the state level, which is the responsibility. And, you know, I can personally say, Barbara, my amount of taxes that went to the school decreased by $26 this year. So the school district cannot increase, other municipalities can automatically do a 3% increase. School districts cannot do that. So yeah. When we say it's permanent and it's set, it is set, but because of more, I guess you'd say parcels, property going on to the tax rolls, the amount that everybody is paying should decrease.
Yeah.
Mine has.
Because
I can only speak.
The group is bigger that's contributing.
Same amount of money is now spread out over more people.
Yeah.
It's another way to look at it.
Yeah. I appreciate that. And I think also people do need to understand, and we've talked about it on the air, that if it should ever need to increase or the proposal is to increase, it will go back to the voters.
Absolutely.
Because I think that is really important. There was something, and I don't know, we're not going to have time. We've got like 30 seconds or so here, but I read an article that there is apparently going to be a proposal which would, I don't know how successful it could be, for universal school choice legislation in 2022. Have you heard anything about that?
Universal school choice.
I think it's moving toward not using the word voucher.
Oh, yeah. Every year, the legislative session, that kind of comes up, whether it catches traction. That particular piece of legislation has not come to the forefront
right.
to me.
I don't think it gets out of committee very often.
Not very often,
has.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it goes back to, you know, constitutionally, separation of church and state, and can you use it for private or religious schools? And I know that's a big, big topic.
Yeah. But the idea is parental choice. All right. Well, incredibly, we're out of time. And I've enjoyed talking with you. I know our listeners appreciate it. Also, you're coming in on your holiday break. So, Albertson, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you, Barbara.
All right, everybody, I'll be here next week. We have another candidate for governor. This campaign has contacted me, and so in all fairness, I have agreed. I have a phone conversation with governor candidate Ammon Bundy. And so we're going to bring that to you next week. I hope you'll be with me. Until then, this is Barbara saying take care and may God bless you abundantly.